Hello and welcome to Inside Out episode 51. Today's episode is proudly supported by Mount Elephant, the superheroes in plant-based food. Today's guest is the beautiful Ashley, who you'll likely already know from Instagram as Warrior Women Wellness. Ashley is a nutrition, movement, and mindset coach and is on a mission to connect women to their inner warrior. In her coaching, she's created individualized programming by combining knowledge and wisdom together to empower women to design their own diet template that works for them and their own lifestyle to sustain lifetime results. She provides the science and wisdom in her online coaching programs whilst breaking old patterns and guiding you to reconnect with yourself and find your inner warrior. Ashley is an absolute powerhouse of knowledge, and in this conversation today, we discuss diet culture in the fitness industry, body image, what is health, reconnecting with our body, rebuilding our relationship with ourselves, nutrition mindset, becoming a warrior in wellness, and so much more. If you enjoy this episode, I would love if you can take the time to leave a quick written review on the podcast app. This will really support my podcast to support more women on their well-being journey. I am so excited for you to hear today's episode. So without further ado, let's dive in. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me today and coming on the podcast. I am so rapt to have you on here. How are you?
Very, very good. No complaints. Life is pretty sweet these days.
That's so, so good. Look, I wanted to kickstart today's episode with just talking a little bit about you and your life. So can you share a little bit with us who you are, where you're from, and what brought you to here?
Yeah, so I have been in the health and nutrition space and fitness space for about 10 years now. Started as personal trainer, as many do, and then now I progress more into, a nutrition and mindset coach. So I am 35 and I have recently, almost a year ago now, moved to Byron Bay. It was always in my big vision of moving to paradise and setting up a life where I am I kind of driven by my core and my core values, which is like freedom and connection. So where, so those are just like such a beautiful place for that. Like I work all online now, so obviously running my own kind of day, but the community that I've tapped into up here has just been so lovely and so healing. So it's nice to live in paradise, can't complain about that.
I bet it is. That is really my end goal, Byron. I think that's so many people's end goals. I resonate with you about your core values because mine are freedom and connection. And I've actually recently been talking to a couple of girlfriends just about how with our core values, quite often we feel like we're not fulfilling those, or we're not satisfied or successful in our day because we're not living in alignment of those core values. But that's part of the scale of this, the epitome of freedom and the epitome of connection that we're looking for and fighting for, instead of just really, and something that I'm working on doing, in it being present and noticing how they exist in my everyday life now, and how I can have that freedom in my everyday. And I do have that connection in my everyday. I've just got to look for it a little closer. So I love that you mentioned that there.
Yeah.
Now, one of your girls actually in your coaching group connected us, which I love. I used to train with her, I mentioned before we hit record, a little while ago. And I know that she's a listener on the podcast, and she knows that I've been on a bit of a healing journey with my relationship with my body and food. And it is a conversation that I am really passionate about. I have so many, old teachings and breaking old patterns that I'm working on. Like, I know that that's something that you are passionate on doing as well and teaching. So really looking forward to learning more about you and your mission and just sharing my own experiences, because I feel like anyone that's been on a diet or, been in the fitness industry is coming out the other side of it now and noticing how many poor habits we have had in the past. But just taking it back a little, I know you've undergone a healing journey yourself and you have battled with crippling body dysmorphia and disordered eating. For those that don't know what that is, firstly, can you share what that is? And then can you tell us a little bit about that journey yourself?
So body dysmorphia is actually a mental illness. So it doesn't kind of get that level of attention and respect as many other mental illnesses, but it's so common. And basically it is like an obsession or fixation on physical flaws, whether they be, just minor or just completely perceived or made up. It generally manifests in like obsessive behaviors around trying to fix or eliminate. So women will go through things like surgeries or crazy diets and, all these like really extreme measures to try and, I guess, fix what they perceive as being wrong with their bodies. So yeah, body dysmorphia is at the root of eating disorders, most eating disorders, some level of it anyway. But disordered eating, you can have disordered eating without having body dysmorphia. So they are like, yeah, they are mutually exclusive kind of things. Like they're not, but I mean, they can exist without each other. So, disordered eating is basically, just like an obsessive mindset or anxiety around food choices. And that can also link into body weight and body shape as well. But again, some disordered eating is not even linked to body shape. It can be just control. It can be massive fears around like health and clean eating, which may not even be linked to body weight. So yeah, there's like this huge broad spectrum of disordered eating being on one end, which is kind of like having a certain level of food anxiety and engaging in restrictive behaviors, to eating disorders, which is all the way up the other end. So anyone can sit on that kind of that like wavelength, and I've moved up and down that scale like many, many times in my life. To extreme eating disorders like bulimia and anorexia. So I was really, really, really sick in my teens, and then, you know, kind of through my fitness journey thought that I was healing, but actually went into a space called orthorexia, which is like obsessively clean eating. So for me, that just seemed normal, and a lot of people in the fitness industry will kind of behave that way, but it is an eating disorder, a classified eating disorder. Then all the way to just like simply avoiding certain social scenarios because I didn't know how I'd feel around the food and everything like that.
This episode is proudly supported by Mount Elephant, superheroes in plant-based food. Mount Elephant use naturally nutritious ingredients such as hemp to create delicious food that nourishes your senses and soul. Hemp, known as the superhero of the superfoods, is a great source of plant-based protein and can help reduce inflammation in our bodies. Shop Mount Elephant's baking mixes and hemp and oat milk in Coles and Woolworths today or online at www.mountelephant.com.au.
So even those kind of minor things is disordered eating. But I guess people don't really recognize sometimes their behaviors as being disordered. They become so normalized.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting how our relationship with food and our bodies, like we know, we've learned, I think it's quite prevalent in society that we all, as women, understand that we have learned to have shame surrounding our body image and judgment on our body image as women from a really young age, girls. And there's usually, you know, you can usually think of the first time that you were told that you were fat or that you were ugly. Everyone's got that little memory, that niggling memory. But when did it, like, you know, to reflect on it, when it started for having a poor relationship with food and what meal time were you made to sit there and force fed until you finish your meal? I know that my mom put a belt strap around my chair so that I'd finish my dinner. That is not normal, and we wouldn't do that to me. But I know that didn't affect my relationship with food. It was binge eating and you know, my poor reflection of myself that really impacted my relationship with food. So it's interesting how, you know, as we're all developing and learning these behaviors, but they definitely started when we were really, really young. And and I love that there are more women like yourself in this industry, in this fitness industry, that are finally looking at it from this view and are able to see this lens of we need to fix this. It's not normal. It's a mental illness. It's not health. It's not what health looks like.
No, it's not. Absolutely. And I think you touched on a really important point there. It's like a lot of the time we didn't even realize when we were being imprinted with this. Like mine was very obvious. I was a gymnast growing up, so my body was like how I gained love and respect was performance and perfection. So obviously this like deeply ingrained perfection complex very, very early. But even like modeling, like watching my mother diet, she'd eat a different dinner than us, and she would comment on her body at the beach saying that, you know, Greenpeace are going to come and scoop her off the shore and ha ha ha, and like all these little things that we're absorbing, you know, Special K, like diet cereals in the house. Like we're just being constantly flooded since we were so young with all these messaging around dieting and around controlling our body weight. And we don't realize how much, like how thick that layering is and how deep that conditioning is until, you know, you hit your 30s and you're like, why the fuck do I still do this? Why do I still feel like this? Why am I still obsessing? Like, and it just draws so much energy away from the things that really matter and the things that actually, you know, nourish our souls and make us happy. It's just, yeah, it's really sad. It steals people's lives, this obsession and this, yeah, preoccupation with food and body.
My mom had a magnet on the fridge that said nothing tastes as good as thin field. Cut out of like Jennifer Aniston or someone on the fridge. Yeah. Feel my auntie still has someone in the cupboard that she cuts out from a magazine and puts it in the cupboard. Now my auntie's like ridiculously thin, like it's so much that you need to just break down and unlearn, and it was imprinted from such a really young age. Can you recall, I suppose, the pivotal moment where you were like, this just isn't for me anymore, I don't want to feel this way, this is wrong, and I want to...
Oh God, I think there were so many, and that was the hard thing, is like, because my belief systems were so deep, because they're literally rooted from when I was like a child, about my body being my worth. There's so many times when I tried to recover and I would relapse. Like my recovery efforts felt endless. I kind of, even when I was deeply engaged in a lot of these behaviors, I still didn't want to fucking be there. Like it was just really hard for me to separate from it. I guess the biggest kind of breaking point for me, breakthrough point, sorry, was, I'd competed. So I did like a bodybuilding competition. This is in the phase where I was convinced myself that I wasn't disordered and I wasn't orthorexic and everything was fine because it was all fitness related. I was no longer
trying. It goes from one end of the scale to the other end, right?
Oh, yeah. That's like fitness competitions is just another way of like competitive dieting. It's just like a little bit of muscle. Like, congratulations, you can starve yourself for 12 weeks. Like, but I remember I thought that I was kind of in a good place, and then I remember coming up off the back of the end of the competition and realizing that I just triggered everything that I'd spent, you know, a good part of like 5, 6, 7 years healing, because I was terrified to gain weight off the back of a competition. I was like 52 kilos. I weigh 67 or something now. So I was tiny. And then it took me another 2 years of being stuck in that space of that relapse where I was like, wow, I don't want to spend another 6, 7 years doing this. So I actually went to South America and did a lot of plant medicine. So I went to an ayahuasca retreat in the jungle. I'm not sure if you know much about plant medicine or ayahuasca. It's basically like a psychedelic which links you to your subconscious and I guess your inner soul. And I had just one of those moments over there in an experience where I could see how I'd been treating my body my whole life, and the image was like, it's quite weird, it was like my body was this like huge big like elephant, which sounds very strange, but like a beautiful stoic strong elephant, and I had just been whipping it, and it had just been like silently walking, never broken down, but just like I'd been torturing this thing for so long and it never let me down. It was still with me and it was still moving and it was still carrying me through the world, but it was like dead eyes, like crying on the inside. And I just, it was a really weird metaphor to experience, but I was like, oh my gosh, like at what point is this just going to give up on me and I'm going to have to suffer like the consequences of being so horrible to myself? And so then when I came back, I started, I guess, the whole journey of moving myself away from calorie counting and restrictive diet and orthorexia to what I do now, which is I went all the way in the other end, which is like the intuitive eating method. And now I sit, what I do is something called an informed eating method, which I'm sure Paige maybe has told you about. So transitioning from dieting, counting calories, like constantly focusing on food, to like learning to trust my body and learning to connect into my body was like a terrifying journey. And like, I did gain quite a bit of weight. Well, not really quite a bit, probably not by normal person standards, but in my head, it was really hard, probably about 8 kilos or so, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It like taught me to completely separate from this image that I had of myself that I had to be, and I learned that I didn't lose any friends. My partner still loved me to death. Like, I still had respect. I still, like, you know, and I felt great because I finally was like eating enough food. So actually gaining weight was the most healing thing that has ever happened to me because it helped me create that separation. And then once I learned to regulate my appetite, once I learned to listen to my body, I actually naturally just go back to kind of where I am now, which is like athletic. I don't count calories ever. I don't think I have in like 5 or 6 years, maybe. I train, you know, to a level that I feel is comfortable for my body and that I love. You know, I eat well 80-90% of the time, and then I treat myself whenever I feel like it's necessary or I feel like it. There's no guilt or shame, but it took me to kind of go from the extreme to almost the other extreme and then regulate myself back to the point where now it's just like, I just live. I don't really think about it too much.
You know about integrating things like alcohol into your lifestyle. So for me, that's probably my poorest habit is, you know, on a Friday night, when my kids go to bed, I want a glass of wine. And by glass, I mean bottle. So then I feel the next day, like I'm not hungover and I don't like go and have Maccas or anything. But the next day I feel like I've just wasted because all these, you know, and this is old teachings again, calories in a bottle of wine, how many bloody calories is in there? I've just wrecked the whole weekend. And it's that I'm still stuck in that. Like I can acknowledge it and I know it's there.
Yeah.
This is really shitty that I'm thinking about the bottle of wine I drank last night. Why am I worried about it? Today is today. Like, nourish my body today. But it's really hard to break that pattern. What strategies, I suppose, did you have in place to break those patterns?
So first and foremost, I guess strong connection to core values is big for me. So like we spoke about this earlier. So when I'm making a decision based on like, do I want to go and have a drink tonight or do I want to go to dinner and just like not have alcohol? Like I'm like, what's the most loving choice right now? Sometimes the loving choice is to have a glass of wine. Sometimes the loving choice is to say no. And it will come back to like what feels most aligned for me at the moment. Is it being social and engaging and letting go, or is it kind of like I've had a hard week, I know I need to have a good night's sleep and I know I want to wake up tomorrow and do this. And I make a decision based on checking in with myself. So I just like always staying in alignment, like what's the most aligned choice right now, and not being influenced by anyone else around me. But I think what's really important as well is to have an adequate self-care toolkit. Because when we use food and alcohol, it's to regulate nervous system. Like what you were describing then is like you're stressed, you need something to regulate your nervous system. And like we use these things that give us like dopamine and serotonin, but also a depressant like alcohol will help you calm down a little bit. So having a rounded self-care toolkit is going to enable you to like look at all the options and then make a conscious choice. So this is something that I teach in my programs. It's a connection to the four bodies. Which is the physical body, the mental body, the spiritual body, and the emotional body. And having self-care practices for all these different bodies. So you'll find that you won't get to the point where you need alcohol to calm down, because there is constant self-care practices integrated throughout the week and throughout your days that continue to keep your nervous system regulated and continue to stay connected to yourself. So you don't need alcohol to numb out. You don't need food to numb out. You're not using these things as suppression strategies, because that's essentially what they are, is like wanting to not feel an emotion or wanting to avoid feeling an emotion or wanting to just shut your body down a bit to help you relax. So, yeah, I have I teach women to do this in my program, but, yeah, I've got a lot of, like, self-care practices that I make sure that when I'm choosing to have a drink, it's not because I need it for something. It's because, like, feels aligned. It feels good. It's a loving choice.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really perhaps a little mantra or affirmation that you could put on a post-it note and put around the house, on the mirror, on your desk. You know, am I making an aligned choice right now? Or where can I come from a place of love? I think I could actually even do that, because that would just go in that thought process. It allows you to stop, be present, reflect, and move, make an informed choice based on what you really, really want to do that, you know, I guess support your future self as well.
Yeah. Because,
you know, in those minutes or moments when, you know, example, you have, or I have a chaotic day, it's nuts. And then I finally get two babies to sleep. It's 7:30. I want to go to bed too, but I'm like, okay, I just need to chill for a minute. Whew, I could make a cup of tea. I could go and read my book. I could go and meditate, but instead I'm like, I'm going to have a bottle of wine. So just removing, I guess, the old addiction or addictive behaviors as well.
Yeah. Like
binging, when I was younger, it was binging on food, which then, you know, would create a poor relationship with myself the next day. And then I would feel guilty and I would go on that vicious cycle. But as an adult, it's remove food, alcohol, basically. And that's what we do now as adults. So that's really cool that you have those practices in place with the four bodies, because when we think about self-care too, like sometimes self-care is just, you know, we think of it as, I guess, simplistic terms, like self-care is reading a book in bed with a cup of tea. That's looking after yourself, but noticing that there's four elements to that, that's really cool.
Yeah, self-care is also screaming into a pillow. Self-care is like grounding in nature. Self-care is setting boundaries with people. Like there's all these different ways that we need to be like implementing self-care like all the time, not just when we get to the point where like, oh, fuck, I need a bubble bath right now and a glass of wine. Too late by that point. Like you've got to be constantly doing it all day, every day to ensure that you're not getting to those points where you're making poor choices because you want the most potent version of that, you know. One will just like smack you out a little bit, you know, but like you don't want to get to that point. It's got to be a way to regulate consistently throughout the day and throughout the week, so when you do go, well, do I want a wine, it's like, fuck yeah, that'll feel nice. Like that's coming from a place of like you know, there's no need, or it's, yeah, it's a loving choice, not a choice out of necessity or to try and calm down or numb.
Just digressing a little bit to your work, which I'm really looking forward to talking about. So obviously the name Warrior Woman Wellness, such strong in this brand identity. Can you share a little bit of backstory? What led you to creating such a fierce brand to start with?
Yeah, well, I actually just rebranded at the start of the year. My old brand was called Chicks Who Lift, which is obviously very much around resistance training. And now I still do a lot of the training stuff, but I'm focused more on mindset and nutrition. So I knew I needed to rebrand. But I've been working a lot with feminine archetypes recently. My Byron kind of family were all a little bit woo. There's a lot of coaches, a lot of like holistic coaches, mindset coaches, like feminine embodiment coaches. So we're all exposed to all these, you know, different concepts and methodologies. So yeah, so feminine archetypes is something I've been really, really into. So the main ones are like mother, lover, priestess, and warrior. So an archetype is I guess a universal DNA blueprint that every woman has these four archetypes inside them. And we kind of step into these roles at different times throughout our day, throughout our week in different scenarios. But we all have like a core archetype, which we wear most of the time. So obviously if you're a mum, sometimes it could be the mother. If you're in a business, it can be you step into your warrior. When you go priestess, she's like a very spiritual kind of connected woman. And then the lover is the playful, sexual kind of flirty one. When I was just reading about archetypes, and I actually had a dream. Like I make lots of decisions based off my dreams. Some people think it's a bit nuts, but I've never gone wrong. So I had a dream that I was, because the warrior one is by far my strongest archetype. And when I connected into what the warrior woman archetype is, she's a leader, she's resilient, she's strong, she's resourceful. She carries the tribe, you know what I mean? She looks after everyone, but she's also looks after herself. She's very, very strong. And so when I was connecting into this, I was thinking, this is what I bring to the women that I work with, is that sense of like taking back their personal power, their sense of resilience, their sense of inner strength, and the sense of being able to provide for themselves with all their needs. And so that's kind of where I came up with it, is like, this is what I am here to activate in the women that come into my circle and that I work with, is, yeah, that inner warrior woman.
It's so cool. It's a great brand name, and it certainly would make a lot of women feel more aligned with themselves as well, I suppose, just with the name and then, you know, stepping into your programs, which we'll talk about now. So you support and transform hundreds of women in your Nourish, Conquer and Thrive program. Can you share what this program is all about and maybe give us a bit of a peek into some of the practices that you teach?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a community-based program, meaning that it's small groups of women, and basically it's an 8-week container. It's very education-based. So this was birthed from basically the understanding that there was a lot of women coming to me with a similar challenge, and there was a lot of education that needed to take place. And there's like a very similar process to go through that I would walk most women through in order to transition from where they are now to where they want to be. So the common challenge was I was attracting a lot of clients who were obviously picking up on my message and my journey. They were, like we spoke about, indoctrinated into the fitness industry with counting calories and macros and, you know, training at a certain intensity, which was great and served them to a certain point. But then obviously it started to become problematic and it was creating a lot of anxiety. They didn't know how to move away from it. So it's almost like they learned what they needed to learn, but they didn't know how to then adapt it in a way that was sustainable. And there was just, a lot of obsession and anxiety and disordered eating that was starting to kind of come up. So through the kind of methods, we spoke a bit about my education before we hit record. So I've got a really diverse education background when it comes to nutrition. I've done like precision nutrition and clean health, all of their certs, which is like 3 or 4 certs. I've done the Institute for the Integrative Nutrition, and now I'm doing a cert through the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. So there's a lot there. And I came up with like this method that basically helps women transition from a diet mindset, calorie macro counting and obsessing over food, obsessing over body, all the way through to an informed eating method, which is a beautiful cross-section between intuitive eating and externally controlled eating. So basically, the idea is that you're applying the foundational nutritional knowledge and science, as we can't throw that out, with internal body wisdom. So combining knowledge and wisdom together to empower women to design their own diet template that works for them and their body and their lifestyle, something that's sustainable in the long term. Because I work with active women, so I can't discount the fact that there are requirements that these women need to hit. And a lot of the time when you've been chronically dieting, you don't have an intuitive sense of hunger and fullness or what you need. So I wanted to make sure that I was applying the science with the wisdom to create this informed eating method, which is all about making empowered choices around food that serve your core values, that also serve your higher self. And that are all about, you know, coming from a place of love and self-respect as opposed to deprivation and control and self-rejection. So that's basically the format of it. So lots of nutrition skill development, learning how to eat again, like learning how to actually nourish ourselves. Because when you do all this calorie and macro counting, you're externalizing that knowledge and wisdom. You're having an app tell you or your coach tell you what to eat. So it's all about reconnecting with self as well to guide you. So lots of nutrition stuff, but we also go deep, deep, deep on the psychological and emotional drivers of eating behavior, because that is, I guess, the most fundamental piece, the most important thing. You can try and change yourself from a behavioral level, what you put in your mouth and how you move, but unless you're dealing with the belief systems and the emotions that drive those, then you will always cycle back to your old behaviors because you need to work a little bit of a deeper level than just behavioral. You need to go into the beliefs and the values and the emotions as well. So, yeah, very diverse range of topics that we cover throughout the program.
Yeah, and would you have any tips, I suppose, like to teach children or the teens sort of these practices without, you know, they're drilling it into them like you're forcing them to eat and believe a certain way? Like, What would you encourage?
I think around children, I don't really work with children, so I don't know. I can't give too much advice there, but I think with young teens and I think with especially girls, when they're getting to that place where they're becoming more body conscious and they're starting to see all this diet kind of rhetoric, giving them foundational understanding of nutrition, of healthy nutrition, like protein, carbs and fats and why they're important, not no numbers, nothing like that. And then helping them understand how to nourish adequately, like how to eat enough. The most fundamental tool that I teach people, and it is so basic, but so impactful, is checking in with their hunger and fullness. So eating, there's a thing called the hunger and fullness scale. I've got like a post on my Instagram about it. You can find it on the internet, basically rating hunger as a one and it's like extreme hunger as a one and extreme fullness as a 10. And eating only when you're at a 3, so comfortably hungry, and finishing always when you're at a 7, which is comfortably satisfied. And if you can essentially connect into your body and say, do I physically need food right now? Am I comfortably hungry? Yeah, I'm going to eat. And then checking in with your body to make sure that you're not going to overfeeding as well. This way you regulate appetite. So you're never in extreme hunger, which leads to overeating, and you're never in extreme fullness, which then leads to guilt and restriction. Mm-hmm. So if you can just like indoctrinate that body wisdom of like checking in with the body to see if I'm hungry. And if it's a yes, then eat. If it's a no, maybe I'll just wait a little bit until I'm feeling comfortably hungry. Because when you eat, when you're not actually hungry, you also bypass a lot of the pleasure and satisfaction that you get from food. So you might be eating the calories, but you're not actually deriving much pleasure. Mm-hmm. And same thing when you overeat as well. You obviously, even if it was pleasurable, you've now put yourself into a state of displeasure, which also breeds a bad relationship with food as well. So it's a really basic tool and the most fundamental one when it comes to just maintaining healthy body weight. Essentially, if you're not overeating all the time because you're very, very associated with the sensations of fullness, then, you know, the chances of actually like developing an overeating, I guess, pattern are very low. And if you're not allowing yourself to get super, super hungry all the time, the chances of binge eating or emotional eating are also kind of like leveled out a little bit. So it's just such a basic tool and something that I would definitely be teaching everyone is just connecting hunger and fullness. Because you'll notice kids intuitively, they're the best intuitive eaters ever. They're done when they're done. Like when they've stopped, don't want to eat anymore, they will tell you they don't want to eat anymore. But we kind of force them sometimes.
Yeah. So I've got a 1-year-old, 8.5-year-old, a 9-year-old, and 11-year-old stepdaughters are the two older ones. And I notice with the two older girls when they were a little bit younger, and like my son's now 2.5, no matter what it is, lollies, cake, whatever crap he's eating, when he is full, no more.
Same with my daughter, who's one. Whereas the older girls, they've just bypassed that now where it's yummy, I'm going to keep eating it, even though this. And now I'm having to step in and say, you've had enough, have a glass of water. And that's an element that I wanted to mention too. I really find for myself and for my older girls is asking, how much hydration have I had today? Am I dehydrated? I think they had a bowl of cereal this morning, and I mean, full cream milk, couple of Weet-Bix. And then they're like, can we have a chalky milk? I've got like this cacao and oat milk that I buy from Woolies. I was like, have a glass of water. You've just had like milk. Like, you're not hungry. You just want the taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
Just really noticing that hydration can play such an important key in feeling hungry and feeling unsatisfied.
And also, yeah, that's a great point. And also there's like mindfulness as well. So a lot of time when we eat fast, we're not actually sitting with the sensation of the food. We're not gaining the pleasure from it. And there's this thing, a little hack called the 2-minute rule. So when you eat something, the potency of the flavor, say let's use a piece of chocolate for an example, has high potency for about 2 minutes. Beyond 2 minutes, the chocolate will start to taste very bland. So if you can get your children to either have like a nice snack or something that's been high sugar or whatever, you know, kind of food that they like to indulge in, and make it a game of like, what kind of flavors can you taste? Like, what sensations can you feel in your mouth? Is it crunchy? Is it soft? And get them to tune into all the subtleties of the flavors and sit with it in their mouth for a while and break it down and connect to like smell, taste, the sound of the food, the texture in the mouth. Like, this is all what mindful eating is. And then by the time 2 minutes is up, when you go to eat more, it doesn't have that intensity. So the drive to continue to eating is minimized. So, but a lot of the time when we're eating this stuff, we're mindlessly shoving it into our face and we're like watching TV or we're like chatting or whatever. We're not tasting the food. And so the satisfaction level is minimized so much. Whereas if like you're super present, like you can draw 2 squares of chocolate out over several minutes and it's very, very satisfying. And then by the end, you're like, I actually don't need anymore because that felt really intense. So that's something that you can do as like just a practice is like create no distractions around food. Like when you're eating, you're present. You're not on your phone. You're not on the TV. Like you're actually mindfully eating and you very slowly eating, putting your knife and fork down between each mouthful, chewing until it's liquid in your mouth, which is also great for digestion, great for nutrient assimilation. So mindful eating practices is also something that I like super, super heavy on in my program, because again, slowing down that process, and it's not only better for digestion, your fullness signal kicks in sooner. And also the pleasure sensations are higher. So therefore you're not likely to finish your meal and continue to reach for food. When you're like present with it, you taste it, you experience it. It's so satisfying that you're like done. But yeah, it's when we're distracted, we get to the end of a meal, and this happens to me all the time. I like look down, I'm like, shit, I've eaten that whole thing. I didn't even taste it. And then I'm like, oh, I want something else. And you know, you're back in the fridge because you want the pleasure as well as the calories, like fullness and satisfaction, very different things. You can be full and unsatisfied. So like tuning into the satisfaction in the food is key to minimize like mindless eating, overeating, binge eating, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned just before, please excuse my voice, it's so terrible at the moment. But you did mention just before that you try and deter away from calories. Now we do know that, you know, for our macros, when we're counting macros or, you know, fats, carbs and protein, when we're training either a high intensity diet, example, I do CrossFit, 4 to 5 times a week is ideal for me. I really enjoy that high intensity, but I also enjoy strength work because I know that I get the optimum results in my intensity if I'm doing strength consistently. And we know that we need a particular amount of protein in our diet. Well, most people do, especially if you're training that type of hypertrophy training and things like that. Now, my question is, in your program, because you try to deter away from calorie counting and macros and that addictive behaviors that are associated with that, do you still talk about the amount of grams of protein, fats and carbohydrates that a woman would need in their active lifestyle?
Yeah, definitely. So I give people a range of different options as to how they want to hit their minimums. They can either track initially to get an idea. I have everyone eating at maintenance, by the way, in this program, because I can't have people in a deficit trying to, you know, work through their emotional eating if they've also in a deficit. Everyone needs to be nourished. So everyone's eating at maintenance, and they can either track initially to understand what that looks like and how it feels, and then we slowly move away from tracking whilst integrating these other skills like hunger and fullness, mindful eating, like all the environmental stuff. So I kind of like, it's like a graded thing, like we kind of phase it out and phase other stuff in. If they're more confident, then they can go straight to that. Like, it's a lot of women have been tracking for so many years, they absolutely know what it looks like. So I get them to either do a day of tracking, take photos, and then like try and reference the photos as a way to put together their meals without like scales or anything like that. Otherwise, really simple method, which is a precision nutrition method, is the hand portion method. So this much protein every single meal, a palm size, one cupped fist full of carbs, two big handfuls full of veggies, two thumbs full of fat. And essentially, the bigger your hands are, the bigger the human you are. So if you've got little hands, you're a little human. You've got big hands, you're a big human. It's just a general rule of thumb. That's so basic, and it tends to work because people kind of overestimate the accuracy of tracking anyway. Like, it's not as accurate as people think it is. They just get so locked onto it. But yeah, that can be a really simple method for someone who really doesn't want to track because it creates so much anxiety, which is fine as well. So I provide some options, but there must be ways that people actually understand what their minimum requirements are. And then I have them set their foundational nutritional habits, as in like how much protein they need to eat per day, like average weight of it. So I don't really care about the difference between steak or chicken. Like, it's all kind of minor, but like at the end of the day, those are, you know, a few grams here and there, as long as they're in a range, it's all good. And same with the carbs and fats, just knowing roughly what it looks like and then knowing how to emulate it and knowing when to also check in with hunger and fullness. Cause some days they get to the end of the day and they would have eaten, you know, their minimum requirements, their requirements, and they'll be hungry. So I'm like, eat. If your body's telling you you need food, eat. And the next day they might not be hungry. You're not hungry, don't eat. Like, that's really normal too. Our energy requirements are so different from day to day. To try and eat the same thing every day makes no sense, especially the female body. We're so cyclical that to try and eat in this rigid, repetitive way every day is just as bad as tracking. So it's about understanding your minimum requirements, what that looks like, what that feels like in your body, and then allowing for your body wisdom to come through and to guide you as well. So yeah,
I find for me tracking, I don't find it triggering, but maybe that's me being in denial, but because I love structure and routine so much, I thrive when I've got a structure in place or a routine in place. And for me, knowing what I'm doing or what I need, that really allows me to stay connected with my goals. But in saying that, I suppose that is a bit of denial from me too, because also if I'm not hitting those macros, I do feel unsuccessful and I do feel like I'm not going to reach my goals if I fuck up one day. So there is a problem with that I can
see. Yeah. Isn't it? It's like, that's the thing about macros, is like, this is the problem. It's like people look at they achieve or fail. It's like pass or fail. Every day is like a pass or a fail. If you go over or under, you failed. It's like, well, no, like the human metabolism doesn't work like that. So, and it does create that kind of thinking that if somebody overeats one day, then they feel like crap, like, oh, screw it. And I've ruined it. I'm just going to binge for the rest of the weekend or whatever. You know, it just creates this, yeah, like this real dichotomous attitude that doesn't really serve in the long term anyway. And it just disconnects you from your body. Like when you're being told what to eat from an app, as opposed to listening to yourself, you create further and further disconnection and you lose trust, you lose rapport.
Absolutely. I think I need to join your program.
I think you do.
I think when we finish this chat. Now, I know you're also advocate for mindset being a really important part of the healing relationship with ourselves physically. In what way do you encourage clients to transform their mindset?
Yeah. So I also have an NLP certification, which I'm not sure if you know much about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So I guess the level that I like to work with is I use this model based on identity shifting. So if you can imagine a pyramid, identity is right at the top. And then it's like belief systems, values and beliefs, then it's thoughts and emotions, and then it's behaviors. So essentially what I try and get to do is to get women to shift into a new identity and embody a new identity. Because when you take care of the identity impacts the beliefs and values, it impacts the emotions and thoughts, which impacts the behaviors. Too many people working on a behavioral level and without shifting the identity, if you still think that you're, you know, the fat girl in the group and you're hopeless and like, you know, nobody loves you and you've got no value, you could lose 20 kilos. But unless you change that identity, you will cycle back to being the fat girl who nobody loves. you'll self-destruct and you'll sabotage, because you need to shift identity in order to shift the behaviors in a long-term sense. So a lot, one of the questions I always ask my clients is like, who is the woman you are wanting to become? Like, what's her identity? How does she relate to herself? How does she move through the world? What are the internal conversations she has? You know, how does she eat? How does she interact? Like, what are her relationships like? And I get them to create this almost like alternate identity. And then from there, we can start to map a path of like how this person operates in the world and what kind of behaviors we need to implement, what kind of thoughts we need to kind of implant and start to reframe. So the first thing is connecting to the identity through like desired outcomes and getting people to attach emotionally to being this like version 2.0, ultimate version of themselves. I also do a lot of stuff around reframing belief systems. I have a task, several tasks around how to help people identify in their history, in their timeline, when a belief system was formed and what kind of conditions that they placed on themselves as a result of that. And then from that point, when we've extracted the belief systems and what kind of narrative they've told themselves around that, then we do something called the meta model of reframing beliefs, which is about flipping them inside out, choosing to understand how it served you, choosing to understand how it's no longer serving you, and choosing another way of looking at this thing. So it's basically, yeah, just it's a system for reframing beliefs, which is really powerful. I also go a lot into helping people understand what their suppression strategies are. So this can be food, exercise, alcohol, relationships, sex, like anything that kind of draws you away from the emotions. And there's many ways that we do that, like, yeah, numbing, distraction, being too busy, being strong, like spiritual bypassing, all these different methods of actually not dealing with what's really going on. Because a lot of the time our issues with our food and body have got nothing to do with food and body. It's got to do with an avoidance of something deeper. So understanding what's being avoided and drawing attention to that, understanding what the suppression strategies are, and building a tool set as to how to actually deal with the core issues is really fundamental as well. So, yeah, I've got like a huge big toolkit of like all these little bits and pieces that I do, but I think the most fundamental piece is connecting women to that identity and working on an identity level, not just like behavioral and not even just like thoughts and emotions, more so even further up that line. Because, yeah, it just takes care of itself. When you shift an identity, everything else just trickles down and it's effortless.
Yeah, that's amazing. I am actually looking at doing NLP in the next, well, not this year, maybe next year once I've got some more free time. But yeah, I would love to do it. I think it's so
really cool.
Human behavior is just so intriguing to me, and why we do the things we do and what's the story behind it is so interesting. So I love that your program includes so much brain work, like so much work internally and internal healing, you know. It's just so important overall. So that's really cool. So you are coaching all of these women, as you've just said, through their limiting beliefs and body image issues. And you've overcome both of these yourself. I know that we're all a work in progress. And you're obviously at a point now where, you know, you're at the higher end of your inner self, and you know who you are, you know what you're doing, you know what you want from life. But what does health look like for you? How do you define health now?
Oh, so different to what I used to think was health, which was like nowhere near health. I guess for me, it is, again, like we spoke about before, it's like having the ability to show up as my most authentic self. And that is somebody who operates in alignment with my core values, who like takes care of myself on every level. And that's not just like my body, that's also my mental health, that's my relationships, you know, all of it on every single level. It's a connection to my spirituality. So once I started, I guess, connecting to that, that opened up a whole different level for me. And yeah, that really helped me detach from my physical body as being, you know, the most important thing, is understanding like how much of an expansive soul I am, and how much of a beautiful human I am, as opposed to just what I look like and how people can admire me through, you know, my physical body. So I guess, yeah, my daily habits are really strong. I journal, I meditate, I move every day, and that could look vastly different. That could be a walk, that could be a CrossFit session. I'm really intuitive in checking in as to what I need. Like if I had CrossFit plan and I wake up and body says no, I do not go. I just do not do it. There's nothing that I'm forcing myself into these days. When it comes to my food, I have like I spoke about before, I have foundational nutritional habits that are non-negotiable for me. I must eat a certain amount of vegetables every day and protein to keep my body functioning really well and to recover. It's not, and that doesn't come from a place of forcing. That is just like acts of self-love. But then I integrate as much pleasure as I can within that as well, and flexibility to ensure that I'm not dipping into any extremes, and that, you know, I'm getting all the beautiful pleasure I can out of food, because it's such a joy. And just like rest and recovery, big for me, making sure that I'm you know, spending enough time recharging, that I am outputting, because a lot of women in the fitness industry are very much in their masculine energy, always grinding, always working, always hustling, and it just burns out. So a big piece for me has been connecting deeply to my feminine energy, which is all about receiving and relaxing and being in flow and allowing for creativity to come through. So yeah, that's a very, very long-winded answer to what health looks like, but I guess it's so multifaceted for me these days, and it looks different every single day.
Yeah, that's so important, I think. And I like that it's, you know, a holistic approach. Like, there's so many different elements that you integrate to what health is, because maybe a decade ago it would have looked like, oh, it's just the gym and eating fish and broccoli, and that's how it feels like. For me, I know I had that ingrained for me a couple of years ago. You know, I was on that fish and broccoli my wedding, and I was training 6 to 9 times a week, and I was running myself to the ground. And was I happy externally? Yes. Internally? No.
No.
I never want to feel like that again. And I think that the more that we can encourage women to go inward on their health, go inward on their mindset, go inward on all these elements, so that they can figure out what works for them, and health doesn't look just one way. That doesn't make you healthy. You can be, you know, a size 16 and be way more healthier than a size 8 girl.
That's it. Yeah.
You've just got to work out what's healthy to us and go with that. And that's how you live your life.
Absolutely. I think everyone, you know, just because you want to be size 8 doesn't mean that you're meant to be a size 8. And the more you try and force your body there, like, you're moving so far away from what healthy is. Like, body diversity is a survival mechanism of the human race. It's just the way that we're built with. We're all different. You know, obviously there's extreme ends of that which are undeniably unhealthy, anorexia, obesity, all this stuff. Like, I won't touch on that because, like, I think it's pretty obvious. But I mean, just because you decide you want to look like someone that you've seen on Instagram, it doesn't mean that that's where you should go. You need to detach from that. So that, I think that's the one thing that women need to really come home to, is like, loving, being the best version of, like, being as close to their natural weight as possible and being the best version of that, not necessarily trying to achieve an externally appealing, like, aesthetic that they've kind of, you know, picked up somewhere and decided that that's what they want to look like, because it's
And I think we need to be mindful of what we're exposing ourselves to. And, you know, social media is such a big part of that now. And if we're following accounts to motivate us and inspire us, and they're these beautiful women that, you know, have these bodies and these images that we aren't, but we wish we were, and then we're exposing ourselves to that many times a day or hours a day, I think that we need to just reflect on that and go, well, is this making me feel good? Is this actually making me feel better and loved? Or is this making me feel like shit and I need to stop following these accounts? Because sometimes it's going to do a bit of a cull.
Well, exactly. Like, our mental diet is so impactful with the way we see the world. You become habituated to what you become exposed to. So if you're constantly seeing images of ripped bodies, that becomes normalized to you. Therefore, you're comparing yourself and going, like, I'm abnormal. I don't follow any fitness, but I follow my friends who are in the industry because I support them. But there's nothing someone out there that can do that's going to inspire me in that field. I follow, like, people who are really good at educating. I follow, like, heaps of weird meme pages. I follow lots of spiritual pages and my friends. Like, I no longer expose myself to people who trigger a comparison thing inside me, because it's natural. It's natural for the human brain to make a comparison, because that's how we're wired, is to relate to the world through ourselves. So if you're choosing to expose yourself to that, you're also choosing to feel like shit. I just choose not to feel like shit anymore.
I love that. That's so cool. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me today. Yes, and so speaking my voice through this episode. It's been a little bit croaky, but we got through. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Inside Out. I really want to grow in this space and make sure these stories and experiences are heard. If this episode resonated with you, I would love to hear from you. Please leave me a review and hit subscribe to ensure you don't miss our next conversation. Please also join me on Instagram and let me know what you thought about this episode at Inside Out with Chris. I can't wait to share more with you really soon.